dude went from pandemic, like March 2020, to now, 2 years later, doing like well over a couple million dollars.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
We are going to just talk about random, boring-ass business ideas that you probably haven't totally heard of before. Maybe you heard them mentioned, but you don't really know how they work or how you can get started. This is probably the first like guest-involved podcast that we've done that's like mostly just riffing on random ideas. And I feel like I found some slightly interesting stuff that is not talked about much these days. So we can probably just jump right into it. And
I mean, it's just fun too, because I think we all kind of enjoy the actual diving into part. So I think I probably have half my ideas are just stolen from Johnny's Twitter account. But yeah,
it was interesting because after going on Twitter and like, I got on Twitter and I was just consuming a ton, just seeing a bunch of stuff that people were talking about. And people were like, yeah, like I love boring businesses. And they're talking about like plumbing and HVAC. I'm like, dude, this is my world. This is all I hear about. Like, this isn't new stuff. So let's talk about some stuff that really people haven't heard of. And then, the first thread that actually got me like a couple thousand followers was this niche business thread, or niche, however you want to pronounce it. And I wrote like three business ideas that I just knew that my buddies were running, three different businesses my buddies were running through the Entrepreneurs Organization. And I just went crazy and people ate it up because nobody had heard of that stuff before.
Is that where most of this comes from? Is like one of these entrepreneurship like mentor things or kind of communities? And then you're like, hey, what's everyone else doing? And you're just kind of picking out examples?
Yeah, pretty much. And every time I meet a new entrepreneur, I always ask them this weird question. I always ask them like, what's the weirdest business you've ever seen? Because I just don't know. Like, you just never know what somebody's seen. And so you're able to find a lot of cool ideas through that. And then I also have like this method that I think nobody else uses to find stuff that nobody knows about.
Well, so I'm going to throw that question right back at you. What's the weirdest business you've ever seen?
Doctors hate them. Podcasts, people love them.
There's so many. I'll start with like the ones I wrote about. So there's like, okay. If you guys know Party Rentals, right? So if you guys heard of Party Rentals, you know, those big tents that they have. So those tops of those tents, they need to be washed. And who do you think washes them? So there's a company and I found this through EO. And what they did was they saw that these tents need to be washed and they're taking a ton of time to be washed. So they made their own machine to wash these tents. So what they'll do is they sell the machines to the party rental companies to wash their tents. Or if they don't want to do that, they also have a service component to it where they also wash the tents for them. So that's all they do is they just wash party rental tents.
But like, so, okay, I hear this and I'm like, okay, this company makes $1,000 a year. Like, are they just cleaning up? Are they making a ton of money on that?
So they're an EO. Was a case study they did. And to be an EO, you have to own you have to own 50% or more of a business that generates over $1 million in revenue. And so in the case study, they're doing like 4 or 5 million.
And then are they just in one city? Or are they selling these things like nationwide?
They're like somewhere in the Midwest. I don't even think they cover the whole country.
Any idea if most of the money comes from actually selling the product or from that service kind of doing the cleaning for them side?
I have no idea, to be honest, because I saw it like a year or two ago. So I'd have to like go back and see the slide deck, but that's just from what I can remember.
I wonder if you can just do that at like scale, right? Because essentially they're a cleaning business. But like, I wonder if
it's like a niche laundromat.
Right. I feel like what I would like to go and do, I saw this one business when we were over, we were in a fraternity back in college thinking about doing like a camping trip. And there's a company out there that essentially will just go and rent you tents. So it's like, hey, you need like 20 tents. Cool. We'll ship you out 20 tents and then you're going to return them. But I got to imagine that those tents get returned and look like absolute dog shit. There's leaves everywhere in them. There's like, God knows what else, especially after a fraternity camping trip. So I wonder if you can kind of do that at scale with more of like a camping experience, less of like just a big event tent kind of thing.
I'm sure you can, dude. What I've realized is there's a market for anything. Like if you guys listen to one of the last My First Billion episodes, they had that lady on, I forget her name. And they're talking about this girl who made like 240 grand on launch of a caramel candy apple course, selling like how to make caramel candy apples to bakers. And it's just printing money.
Speaking of selling caramel apples to bakers, one, it seems kind of weird that the bakers aren't just doing that themselves. But over here, so we're down here in Texas now. Are you over in San Diego?
Orange County, close by.
Orange County. Okay, sorry. I just figured it was a California in general. But there's so many coffee shops here that every single morning at breakfast tacos, and tacos in general are a really big thing here in Austin. Every single morning, it's got to be 100+ coffee shops throughout Austin that just have these same exact breakfast tacos, all wrapped up. You know, you can get like a regular breakfast one, just like egg and cheese. You got like the egg, cheese, potato, bacon kind of thing. And I got to imagine that there's a company that just drives around from between 4 and 7 a.m. and just drops off like 100 to 200 tacos at each location.
Oh, for sure. There's got to be. There's got to be something doing that. If they're all the same thing. I had a buddy open a coffee shop, still open, and they have like, they import specialty like creams. And so from Australia, and there's a company in Australia who just makes like specialty like pumpkin spice creams, and they're crushing it because he imports them, and they're really good because he makes me the coffee. Tons of like, if you just look upstream. So what I like to do is like, I like to look upstream. Like I look at one business. I'm like, okay, what are like all the moving parts that nobody's really thinking about? Because everybody knows about coffee shops, but what are the components that make the coffee shop run?
Yeah.
So whenever I'm like in businesses or see businesses like in industrial areas in the city or like just driving down Main Street or whatever, I just like to look at like these businesses and think like, okay, who's supporting them? And what are the things that people aren't thinking about here?
Okay. I've got one on that note that's somewhat interesting that probably nobody thinks about. And then I read about this guy and I'm like, he's a billionaire and he's crushing it right now. Have you heard of Charles W. Howard?
I have not.
Okay.
You know, it's important with the, he's got the one initial middle name, big deal.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. They got the one middle initial for sure.
I basically just read an article about him and he goes by the Porta Potty King of New York City, which I don't know if anyone wants that title, but like the dude crushes it. So basically get this. He owns 18,000 porta potties and they do $35 million in revenue annually. So just from the number standpoint, okay, there's two ways that they make money. One, they rent out a porta potty. Like 75% of their business comes from construction sites, which I would have honestly thought it was higher, but I guess like you have a lot of event stuff that they probably do as well. They rent it out for $225 per day just to go and rent the actual porta potty. So like you're on a construction site, that's like $1,000 per day per construction site, or probably seems even expensive. More. Seems super expensive. I'd imagine though, the biggest value that they're giving is $100 a week to come and clean them and clean out the septic tank. So like those things get filled up. It's a hot day out in Orange County, California. And like, they're at least coming out with like the septic truck and like removing all of the waste or whatever. So that's super interesting because it's like, okay, these shitty little like plastic bins are making thousands of dollars. The craziest part to me is that the way he sells them is like, he literally said in the article, I'm not afraid to sell with sex. And it's like, yo, you're selling like porta potties. What are you talking about? He basically hires like the hottest woman he can go and find and has them go around New York City construction sites selling porta potties.
Okay. Yeah. So I can riff off this. So it's fun. It's so funny you bring that up. Funny how the world works, because I just met with someone off Twitter yesterday, and it's actually Oren. I don't know if you guys know Oren. He does Unrivaled, his cannabis stuff.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I met with him. He's in Orange County too. And he was telling me about the Porta Potty King of Los Angeles, which is happens to be his buddy. And so there's niches to this stuff. So what he did was when COVID hit, he was like, all right, fuck it. I'm just going to buy a bunch of luxury porta potties. Like, have you guys ever been in the luxury porta potty?
Oh, dude, this is literally my next bullet point here that I was going to bring up if you didn't bring this up. Yeah. Okay. So I've got upscale portable toilets, basically like,
what do those look like?
They're like trailers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're like trailers. And like, instead of being like, you know, the one little blue porta potty that's all nasty, like they've got like actual toilets, like they flush. They've got urinals in there. They've got like a hand washing station. Like they're nice.
The big thing with those two is like, they're not going after these construction sites. They're going after like weddings, right? Like outdoor weddings.
Or like weddings. Like you'll see them at like, if you guys ever been to like Not Scary Farm or like, you know, Horror Nights at Universal Studios, they'll have them there because there's just an influx of people. So theme parks are a big one. I'm not sure where else, but this guy, basically COVID hit, he bought a bunch from China. Like, I think he ordered like 20. Dude went from pandemic, like March 2020 to now, 2 years later, doing like well over a couple $1 million.
Really?
Renting out luxury porta potties.
I got to imagine the margins are relatively high too, because they're not manned, right? You got to go drop it off and pick it up.
I think you make literally for one wedding day, you can make $2,000 just dropping off this trailer that people shit in.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cool thing, the crazy part was, is he put, he had like net 90 terms. Like Alibaba was doing some crazy deal with like net 90 terms. So he didn't even put that much money down, and he like made his money because he pre-sold them all.
I'm so amazing. Curious where the else that can come up, because I think, first of all, one, I would have never expected, I have no idea how much it costs to buy a porta potty. I'm shocked that these construction sites don't just buy it, but I think it's the service bit that really like ties them in. But I'm very curious where else you can tie in something that like, okay, everyone pretty much uses, it's pretty universal, but like, it's not a good experience, right? Like, could you do something like that with parking garages where it's just like, oh yeah, like everyone uses it, but like, it's nothing special. Like maybe you get out and there's like a hot chocolate or hot coffee there for you waiting there. I don't know. But like, I definitely like the luxury element of it.
Side note, the parking garage one's interesting. There's another kid, everyone's on Twitter at this point, who somehow is involved with one of the big companies that, I don't know if his family runs it, but it's all just like automating parking garages. I think on the construction side that you find a lot of these like for rent type, if you got to rent porta potties, there's a lot of temporary stuff that's happening, right? So an interesting one that you probably always see but never recognize are the fence companies, right? You walk by a construction site, and it's like, I think the one here is like Rent a Fence Austin. There's probably Rent a Fence for all of them. I don't know if you could do upscale fencing at all, but like just even the concept of, all right, it's a temporary product, no one really needs that much fencing, and they probably go and it looks like garbage half the time. They're dropping a sandbag on.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say the side. The fences look like shit and scaffolding looks like shit.
Yeah.
So if you can
have one, I have one. Yeah. I have one for this. Let me pause you right there, because I don't want this to go unheard, because I have another one in regards to what you guys are talking about. So yes, the fencing, if you look at the fencing, you'll see like the company's name on the fences. So nobody really pays attention, but it's another like niche rental business. So definitely high margins there. But another cool thing, I know somebody in my chapter of EO, he does scaffolding stairs. So the traditional scaffolding you see in construction sites is like, I don't know if you guys have ever been on scaffolding. I have, because I used to be in the field cleaning windows. So if we did construction cleanup, we would ask them to leave the scaffolding up so we didn't have to get on ladders and stuff to scrape all that paint off. So you'd have to climb up these ladders, and it's super sketchy. And I can't even imagine if you're like carrying material up, it can get really dangerous climbing up these sketchy ladders. So what he did was he made scaffolding stairs, and there's some other companies that do it too. He's not the only one. And so instead of the traditional scaffolding that you see with the ladders, he made it so there are stairs that you just walk up. And so he replaced the scaffolding with stairs.
And is he renting that to construction sites or selling it? Or how does that?
He has his team go in, assembles the stairs for the construction sites. Once they're done using them, he has a team come in, disassemble them, and then use them in another construction site. And he's doing, like I said, he's an EO. So he's killing it with this.
Right. You got a bunch of construction people. They're definitely looking at the costs. They're not picking the nicest porta potty. They're not picking the nicest. They're picking the cheapest thing typically that'll work for whatever they're doing. So I wonder how he's actually pitching this as a, I'm assuming it's probably a safety thing or an OSHA thing, or
it's for sure a safety thing. You think about how many people die on scaffolding a year, and it's actually pretty, I did a thread on it, funny enough. And there's lots of people. Yeah. Lots of people are falling off and dying off scaffolding. It's sketchy, dude. Like you're climbing up these, like you literally are just, there's just bars and you have to climb up the bars. And so imagine in a construction site, if you have to like install glass, or you're taking like wood up, or just like heavy buckets full of material, imagine carrying that up on this ladder. It's really dangerous.
How much, let's say that you're, I have no idea if you know this, or Gio, if you know this at all, but let's say that you're going and doing a project on like a 5 or 6 story building, just to make it easy. Any rough inclination at all how much that scaffolding company charges?
I have no idea.
The reason I ask is because what Gio just said is like all of these construction sites and these crews, what they care about the most is keeping their costs down, right? So if it's in the millions or hundreds of thousands, it doesn't make any sense at all. This idea is kind of a wash. But if you can say like, hey, it actually just costs $10,000 a month or something like that, which is probably not at all what it is, I wonder if you can go and sell advertising space on scaffolding. Like basically like in a city where it's like, hey, we don't let you do billboards, but the local dentist is sponsoring all of this scaffolding. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if that's an opportunity.
So New York has, I think, some of the highest amount of scaffolding out of any city. And everyone always asks like, oh, there's probably just a bunch of construction going on. But on the backside, it's more of a just like aggressive lobbying group and wild local legislation that went unchecked in terms of, it's some sort of requirement around fixing up the outside of the building for, I think for debris falling, I don't know, some sort of safety thing with all the buildings falling apart. And they made a requirement that you had to do scaffolding to catch it, and you had a certain amount of time to, I guess, fix a building. But what happened is that they don't enforce the fact that you need to actually change anything. It's just that you have to build the scaffolding. And so a bunch of groups lobbied that, you know, there's no time frame on actually doing these repairs. So now you just get stuck with all these buildings, that it's way cheaper to just throw scaffolding up to make the repairs. So you probably do something there, because they look so gross when you're walking through the city.
They don't look good at all.
Yeah, so I definitely, anything where people are walking past, especially like construction in a high traffic area, that easily works. I don't see why it doesn't work. But to riff off that, there's a cool company. There's actually a few companies. And so what they'll do is they'll put your advertisement on the like golf scorecards or at the bottom of the hole when you pick up the ball. And so there's literally advertising opportunities everywhere. Like I get calls all the time for people like, hey, do you want to advertise your window cleaning service at my golf course? I'm like,
yep.
It sounds like a good idea in theory, but in reality, it's not a good idea because the returns probably blow because I've tried some of this like alternative advertising and it just doesn't work. But I mean, they're killing it. They have a sales team in place. I know some people are buying that stuff.
Someone called us last month or 2 months ago, trying to ask if we want to advertise a storage facility at a local golf course. Ended up not doing it. I'm assuming the return's not there, but it's interesting. I feel like the billboard on the side of a truck, like it's always one of those cliche business ideas that everyone has of like, hey, why don't we just, you know, pay people to have bumper stickers or whatever, but.
Well, that's why truck wraps work so well. And that's what, like, when we had W-2s, our big thing was like parking, right? Like not marketing, but parking. You wrap your truck and instead of parking it in your yard or whatever, especially if you have a van, this works well if you have a van and you can protect the stuff that's inside. Because if you're leaving your stuff in the truck, it's just going to get swiped. But if you got an enclosed van and you have it wrapped, instead of parking it like in your yard, you can park it on the side of a busy road. And now you should have a free billboard there advertising for you. That's how 1-800 Got Junk got really big. Is they coined the term like parking, and they would just park. Like you'll notice if you drive around, 1-800 Got Junk will just park their vans. The franchisees are trained to park their vans on like gas stations or just like anywhere where they can convince the landlord to like, hey, can I park this here for like $200 a month? And so now everybody's just seeing it when they drive past or walk past.
That's smart. John, I like what you said before about like anything that there's an opportunity for people like walk by. One of the things that I was looking up before this call was like anything that people can also drive by that you can go and change, or like where people are making money in that realm. And some like similar to this porta potty concept is this one company called Barricade International, which basically if you're driving on the highway and you ever see any cones essentially or barricades with like the big sign, the lights and all of that stuff, all of that stuff is not provided by the construction crew. It's like that is purely an equipment rental play. And what's crazy is that it costs almost nothing to make a barricade or these 36 inch cones or whatever, right? Like one 36 inch cone, I think costs like $15, but you can rent them out for essentially 60 cents a day per cone. So like you rent those out for 2 weeks, cool. Like all of your stuff is paid for. The downside, and potentially also the upside as well here too, is almost all of your contracts, unlike the porta potty stuff, which is coming from construction, almost all of your contracts here are coming from government contracts, local state, local township, things like that. So what's cool is like, if you are already pretty into that market in a local market, you can make some serious cash by just buying, I don't know, a couple cones, like a couple hundred cones and some barricades, and then just tapping in anytime there's any kind of like infrastructure play or whatever.
Well, there's always big businesses around that. Like there's one big one over here that I always see. It's like parking, or not parking, it's like construction signage safety or something, like this is the name, I forget the name of it. But yeah, they do cones, they'll do like the big signs. Like if you're driving on the freeway and you see like those big arrows pointing like, yep, hey, go right because this lane's closing. It's all one company who just runs that stuff out.
Wow, see, I always thought it was the contractor. I assumed all the big road contractors just had a, I don't know, a field somewhere with all this signage in it somewhere and lights.
But I don't like, on that note, so Barricade International, they're a big company. What I noticed is that Waste Management tried to go and do a roll-up of all of these companies like 15, 20 years ago, something like that. And it totally failed. Like they just couldn't, there was no synergies across any of it. So I don't know if it's like, I don't know if they felt they had the government contracts and they can just easily add it in, but it didn't work out for them.
I think United, what is it? United Rentals is a big example everyone uses now about that guy that went in and just did the crazy fast roll up. I think it was like a second or third roll up, and he got it to over a billion in like a year and a half, maybe something insane.
Yeah, something crazy. Yeah, the guy, he built like $5 billion companies.
Yeah,
he built like, yeah, the he built what's that big logistics company?
XPO.
XPO Logistics. Yeah, he built that, and he built like three other companies. Same, all the same play too, just rolling up. So yeah, that's wild. Maybe, but yeah, United Rental still makes tons of acquisitions every year. Like local mom and pop rental companies are still starting and selling every day.
So. It's interesting because I think if you're in a city, which I think like 80% of the US lives in like a major urban area, you probably are only seeing a few of the things that we're talking about in this conversation between like the scaffolding, some porta potties on construction sites, whatever. But one of the things that like totally opened up my eyes was like, as we kind of drive throughout Texas here, especially in like the Dallas market, or whatever, you'll start driving through areas where it's almost all farmland and like 500,000 square foot buildings, basically like just the biggest buildings you've ever seen in your entire life. And you're like, what the fuck are those? And then you look on like the side and you're like, oh, there's 200 Amazon trucks. You look on the other side of this, like, oh, there's like 40 18 wheelers just waiting to go and load up on these back bays. So once you start seeing like, okay, we see Amazon, we see the package that arrives on our door, but what happened, like everything in between, there's so much opportunity.
I mean, even if you look there, right, in those same areas, the first time I've ever seen truck washes, like, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But you drive through some of these cities that are just essentially, you know, massive infrastructure to ship things out. There's trucks everywhere, and truck washes, truck mini, like not really truck stop, but like areas on the side where you can pay to stay. Like there's also a huge industry just around how do you deal with the logistics and the service providers working with, like you have truck stops with hairdressers and like tiny villages that pop up from there.
Yeah. No, it's funny you guys bring up Texas, because I was living in Texas for the first month of the year out in West Texas, San Angelo, and I had to drive through Midland, Odessa area, which I know you guys have a self-storage facility in. And that was the first time I saw like all the oil and like pumping services, like oil cleaning services. Like it was nuts. And I like almost got in a couple car accidents because I'm sitting here like trying to look at all the different businesses. I'm like, yo, I've never seen any of this stuff out here in California. I didn't even know it existed. But it's like a whole, like that Midland, Odessa area is just straight oil services.
It's pretty interesting. You land in the airport, and it's called the spaceport in Midland. It's like the airport and spaceport, which I still haven't figured out why. All the billboards are like, oh, get your recycled fracking water, get your tubing, we have the best, I don't know, tubing in the industry. We had to get the facility power washed, and we didn't have water on site. And we showed up, and there's a bunch of different water trucks, and we're chatting about it. And we're like, how, like, What does this look like to get all this water? He's like, oh, there's so much water that's used in fracking that there's a ton of tiny businesses that all they do are drive around with water trucks and fill up either the fracking site or anything with water. And all they're doing is driving around water trucks all day selling water.
Apparently. Yeah, I believe it. I just talked to a guy who lives out there too. Well, he lives in, I think, like Arizona, and he flies out once a month to Midland, Odessa, and he'll clean, like, it's just one guy. And he just cleans like the fasteners or like bearings or some like weird, just like one singular product that these oil service companies use. And yep. He has to clean them or else it doesn't work. Company's probably doing that at scale.
But the crazy part is that especially with all of the money that's over there in oil, there's an outrageous amount of contractors who will go there, make, you know, six figures or whatever like that in 6 months and then bounce. A perfect example is our painter. You know, the guy's pretty much redoing the whole facility for us right now. I talked to him. He's like, yeah, when COVID happened and like oil basically went bust, everyone left this town. So he's like, I just backpacked around like South America for like 6 months. Now I'm back. I'm going to make $100,000. Then I'm going to go over to Bali for a couple months. And I was like, wow, people are just coming in here, making the money and then leaving.
Yeah, I believe it, dude. I believe it. It seems like there's tons of opportunity there.
Oil kind of side, you had an interesting thread on, one of your niche threads, the dry ice blasting power washing one. That was pretty interesting because I'd never actually, I don't know. It's always cool to find something. I was like, I had no idea this existed. Or there was
like engines and stuff that like get the oil buildup on there. And yeah. It's a lot safer way. Like you can't really pressure wash that stuff.
Right.
And so dry ice blasting is like a safe alternative to do that. And there's huge companies doing that. Like you can, and then you can get even more niche with it. Like the reason I found out about that was I was actually on a plane back from the window cleaning convention in August.
I'm sorry to interrupt. That's the lamest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Thanks, man. But it was really fun, dude. It was really fun. Don't knock the window cleaning convention. It's a good time. And there's a lot of niche businesses there I can even talk about. But I was flying back from Atlanta, and I was sitting next to this dude. And I'm always like, I always got to know what people do for work. Like, first question I ask. So I'm like, asking the two guys next to me. One guy was like a hip hop choreographer for like Snoop Dogg or something. Other guy was a dry ice blaster, but they only did dry ice blasting for quarries. So they would fly him out. Like, so he's flying from Atlanta to LA to go do some quarry and dry ice blast it. And you're just a technician, like a laborer.
It just seems like a wild amount of, I don't know, moving people around to just go. I guess I just have no idea what the industry is. It just doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I'm being asked, I don't get it.
There's also a whole thing where people like contract out services like that. So I met a dude at the window cleaning convention, funny enough, who does contracted out high-rise window cleaning for like BC tier cities. So he's in Kansas City. Millions of dollars. Like, he wouldn't tell me how much he makes. He's like really old school, like, I don't talk about money, whatever. So he wouldn't tell me, but I know he's making millions because high rise window cleaning, there's so much money to be made. And so he'll go to these random cities who don't have like high rise window cleaning companies there, like anything above six stories where you can't water fed pole it.
And you can't what was that word?
Yeah, water fed pole. So there's these like huge, like 50, 60, we have a 70 foot carbon fiber pole that connects to a deionized water tank. And you can even say like these companies who are making these water fed poles make tons of money too, but you extend it out and you can clean any windows basically six stories and below because you just scratch the dirt off with a brush and then you spray it, and it dries completely spot free. So that's what we do on residential windows, and it saves a lot of time because you don't got to get up on ladders or anything.
I think on that note though, one of the most interesting things might be like there's so much demand that these people, I don't know, you probably look at it from both ways. Either there's not enough local demand for a local business, or there's so much demand that they can even afford to fly other people in. I don't know which one's accurate, but definitely interesting to see that these jobs are so expensive. You can pay to have someone hop on a plane, rent the equipment, go clean windows and send them back, apparently.
I would say it's the first because like you have to have tons of buildings to make high-rise window cleaning company work. So I would imagine there's just not enough demand, but and then you also have to have those guys trained, which there's already companies in place for like rope access certification. Companies were just doing rope access certification.
And what's that?
And that's to get certified to like scale the buildings, actually. So if you look at the tops of buildings, you'll see little, like, I don't know what to call them. They're like, they look like poles that are like hovering out over the buildings. And that's what the window cleaners attach onto. So you have to be certified to scale down one of those. So there's companies just doing that. And then if you want to put a stage, so there's things called stages, which is what you see the window cleaner standing on, like the big like scaffoldings. The things that rappel down, up and down, those have to be lubed up and to make sure that they can rappel up and down safe enough. So there's companies just doing the lubing for those as well. So I met a guy doing that.
Nice luber. For anyone who is still curious on this dry ice thing, I was just looking it up. It sounds like it's basically more environmentally sustainable compared to pressure washing and safer for like major equipment machinery. So you see a lot of stuff here on like automotive work or like asphalt removal and crazy shit like that, which is kind of interesting.
Do you have a, if you couldn't do windows or regular cleaning or either one of those, do you have a niche right now that you'd be attacking or at least looking into deeper?
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't necessarily do it, but I think it's a huge opportunity for people that no one's really talking about with tons of demand with super low barrier to entry, and it's residential screen repair. So I actually sent you guys an Instagram DM in a group like way back in the day. A company by my house, and they have a big warehouse. And if you look outside, they've got like the Lambos parked, big trucks, like they're just printing money in there. And I met the owner and he refers me a ton of work. Because we don't do screen repair in-house because you have to know how to like cut the frames to length and know how to like put all that stuff together. But it's not hard to learn. It's just something that we didn't want to invest into. And there's like every house, look, just look around you, like the windows behind you guys, those screens need to be repaired every so often from sunlight damage. Maybe there's holes in them, things like that. Maybe frames get bent if window cleaners come and like mess up the frames. So people are constantly wanting their screens repaired, and there's just not enough companies to fulfill on that.
And then that's just some dude, you call him and he comes to your house and repairs a window, or is it are you mailing out the screen, or I'm assuming they're
coming? Yeah, so it's mobile. So what they do is like they have the warehouse where they repair the screens if they do want to do walk-ins. And then they have like mobile workstations. So they have like 8 wrapped trucks driving around to houses, repairing the screens on the spot, putting them back in.
I wonder if you could somehow make a just mobile in general and do like, you do mobile window repair, mobile windshield, mobile screen repair. Because I feel like there's a ton of these different mobile companies now that are popping up that are all very niche. I wonder if there's any sort of thing and kind of combining them together. Maybe not.
Yeah, I like for Johnny's use case specifically. Okay, I'll clean your windows. Hey, just as a heads up, these 3 windows need screen repair as well. So that's perfect for your business too. On the mobile side of things, hands down, the best one I've seen that's been getting a little bit more popular in the last couple of years is the pet grooming stuff, where they'll literally come, like do your pet up in like 30 minutes out in the parking lot, and then like bring them back right back in. That's fantastic.
Even the like mobile iPhone screen repair, I think they're doing now, or like phone repair stuff. But yeah, you need an expensive enough product to, I guess, account for the time to drive somewhere, but.
All right, I've got one more that I think is kind of a nice crossover between all of this boring stuff where like you need a contract or whatever, and also some more tech, which can make it a little bit better for you. Have you heard of a company called YardZen?
I have not.
You have not? Okay, cool. All right, so basically what they do is all they do is just online landscaping design. So you send a bunch of photos of your yard. They'll also give the address. You pull up like an aerial footage view of like what you're doing, whatever like that. And you can kind of get like a overall view of like what your property looks like and tell them a rough idea in terms of what you're doing. So they can do hardscaping, they can do like landscaping stuff, whatever. They're like, their main job is to make your yard look badass and baller, right? And so what it is they have an offer at the front. You're like, okay, like this is probably like the main offer, where basically they'll say, hey, for either $600 if you just want like a simple garden, or for like $2,400 if you want like full front, back, hardscape, everything like that, we will go and do your entire yard. And so you're like, okay, this is perfect. I can pay like $1,500, like if you want something in the middle, and I can have this awesome designed yard that'll look really, really, really nice. So they can reach anyone in America through this, which is really cool. Now, the nice part that they kind of go in afterwards is one of two things. One, they'll then do a ton of lead gen to all the contractors in your area of, hey, this person just wants this job. We're estimated that like, you know, we quoted them $1,500 to design it, but if they actually want to go and do it, it's going to cost like $20,000. Do you want to go and like do this job for them? So they'll subcontract out all the work. And then the second thing they'll do is they'll also provide all of the materials for that job and mark it up. So that way they say, hey, listen, you're going to need all of this stuff. We'll just ship out 2 pallets to your house, and then the contractors will have all the materials. So like, you know, in their mind, they're like, hey, like, you know, the contractors won't mark you guys up, but it's like, here's the design. Secondly, here's the people who can do the job. Third, let's give you all the materials of exactly what you saw in these photos. So that way, you know that it's perfect. What do you think about this?
I love the idea, and they're probably printing money. And I have another business actually in my EO chapter who does something similar, but I think even more niche. So what he does is they're called Living Walls. If you guys want to look up Living Walls, just to paint a picture for yourself, and I'll describe it while you guys are doing that for those that can't see this. They're basically big, like think like plants, but they're vertically hung. And so they look really cool. So you see them in like coffee shops and like restaurants. And people are trying to get them installed on their house. And so he's a master distributor for a big company that manufactures them. And so what he does, it's like a double-ended thing too, kind of like YardZen is doing. And so he'll say, hey, I can send you more work to these landscape companies. I can send you more work, and I'll supply the materials for this cost, whatever. And then he also does a lead gen for the residential customers or the restaurants or coffee shops, whatever it may be that needs them. And so he'll say like, hey, I can put these living walls in for you. And then he uses the contractors to fulfill the work.
These are cool. I feel like someone must have been sitting there and be like, all right, wallpaper, but plants.
Yeah. No, seriously. No, it's super cool. It's a super cool business.
Really, yeah. For anyone that can't see it, typing living wall.
They're basically the background of every brunch place you've ever been in your life.
Oh, for sure.
So, I think that there's a lot of opportunities to do this kind of stuff. Do you know who John Matzner is? Matzner?
No.
Who got on Twitter, jumped on a call with him last week. He's basically doing Yard Zen, but for garages, where he'll say like, hey, garages are simple. We'll go, we'll get a customer in, we'll design the whole thing. And then same exact thing, subcontract out the work and sell you the materials. It'll show up all on a pallet real easy. So that way you can just install your cabinets and whatever. But I think that there's a lot of opportunity to do this like either free or like design as an offer kind of services, and then either do the lead gen or have it be a pure material market play where you're actually just selling the cabinet for 50% more. Like the bigger one that I don't see anybody doing today, but could probably be a pretty big opportunity, is with basements. I know at least growing up in the Northeast, there are so many unfinished basements that were like, it's a decently expensive project and like takes enough time, but like nobody really like wants to go and finish it because they're like, oh, this just seems like a hassle. Like I got to figure out what I want to do. We're like, I don't know. As we were talking, I just searched up betterbasement.com is for sale. Cost $2,000, but I could be a good name. And then you go brand it all around that where it's like, hey, go down, take a video of your basement. We'll go and model out the whole thing, which actually is really cheap if you use overseas talent. And then, oh, cool. You wanted that section on the corner. You wanted that type of carpet and you wanted, you know, these frames on the walls and this finish, whatever. Great. That's going to be $14,000. And there's three people in your area who we know that can install all of it. I think that could be a fun opportunity too.
There's tons of cool. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I guess from the design perspective, I don't know. I guess I wouldn't have thought someone would pay $1,500, $2,000 to get it designed. But now that like I'm thinking about it, I probably, if someone's like, hey, this is what your basement could look like, you don't have to think about anything.
Right.
There's how much it costs. You go in, it makes it a really easy sell, I guess.
Oh, dude, you'd be surprised what people pay for on their house. Like we've done jobs for $10,000 in residential houses for Christmas light gutter cleaning. So you'd be surprised. But there's tons of people crushing it with this idea in different niches. So like there's a bunch of people doing that with kitchen remodeling. So same thing. They'll be like, what type of like, what color granite do you want for your countertops? Like what kind of toilet? And they sell like three different packages, like their base, their deluxe, and their premium. And they have different options for each. And you kind of just like book it online. They send the contractor to do it. And then similar to your idea about, it was garage doors, right? That guy's doing?
Yeah. What John is doing, he's just doing the full garage.
Okay, because there's companies who just built on epoxy garage flooring and they'll just come in and they charge.
I think I've recently seen a lot more of those or a lot of ads.
It's heating up right now because lots of people are talking about it and lots of window cleaners are pivoting to just offer like that. Because again, I know Connor thinks it's lame, but at the window cleaning convention, like they're selling the epoxy garage floor material and like how-to guides on how to start these types of businesses.
There was, I guess combining digital and physical products is always a cool one because that's kind of what it is, right? You're combining a digital product of, hey, rendering service plus kind of design layout, and then giving them the fulfillment option is, did 99 Designs just get purchased or they got purchased by one of the big on-demand print companies, right?
Yeah, I forget who it is, but they did. They got purchased. Yeah. I want to say it was just a print.
Yeah, yep. I think that makes sense. I feel like that's another pretty cool kind of combination between the two of those.
Yeah. Also, like you said, combining service businesses and like online stuff or digital products, tons of opportunity. If you have like, if you're in like a niche service-based business or something no one's talking about, you've seen all these people running like info products on Amazon FBA, drop shipping, like Mark starting a marketing agency, remote closing, high ticket closing, right? So I'm seeing people just print money off of, I met this guy, he owns SMS marketing platform for home service companies that we use. And it's an amazing product. And I was talking to him and I was telling him about kind of like what we're doing with like the remote home service stuff. And he's making 600K a year net income on autopilot off selling, teaching people how to build windshield repair companies. So it's called like rock chip repair. So just like basic, like rock chips on window, on like windshields. So he's selling just a course and running some Facebook ads on it, 600K a year net income autopilot. And he had built up a 9 location, like rock chip repair company before building the marketing platform, but that's what he sells the course on. So I think you could do it in like I have a buddy doing parking lot striping. I'm like, dude, that's the play for you, bro. Like you got to do a course on parking lot striping.
Have you seen that whole, do you know who Bia Heza is on YouTube?
Yeah.
He's got that whole video where he like walks around neighborhoods and like has like decals of different numbers and like spray paints them on the curb for different neighbors. I don't know if he crushed it with that, but I would imagine if you actually try to do it in more of a way that's just like knocking on doors, you could also do some serious work on that too for like different houses.
Yeah, that's just super low ticket. Like you got to bank on volume and sure. probably get some like high schoolers to like do the work for you if you want to build that to be big.
But it could be a good offer in terms of like, hey, like, let me get my foot in the door. You've seen I can do good work here. Now let me go and pressure wash your driveway. Or, oh, you've seen that I can do good work here. Now let me go and clean your windows. Or I don't know, maybe less relatable, but.
A better one is I've seen people go to local high schools and be like, hey, I'll go to like all your football team's houses and I'll paint like their number on the driveway.
Nice.
And so in different towns, you'll see like number 81, like Robinson, like wide receiver, whatever. And then the logo of the school.
I thought you were going to say, hey, I'm going to go to your son's football game and like I'll hold a sign for him and cheer him on while you don't go.
I'm sure someone would pay for that. There's someone out there that would pay for that.
In terms of like the whole line striping and asphalting, like we had a kid come power wash storage facility on the ground, and like the upsells, like the fact that we weren't upsold restriping everything and fixing some of the potholes, and like I think that's the other aspect. It's just mm-hmm. like combining all of these with, you got the intro offer, you got the other upsell, and you end up, you know, yeah, maybe it was a low ticket item like a couple $100 to spray their name on it, but you're already there. You can probably pitch them on a couple other things. Maybe you're doing Christmas lights, but I think that's where you start getting some more really high-end ticket stuff, is combining all of those together.
Yeah, the key there is to just make sure you're adding on services that aren't that complicated, but things like parking lot striping on the surface, even window cleaning, you think like, yeah, I don't window cleaning. There's still some learning curve there and some things that you don't factor in that you're not thinking about that can go wrong. So it creates an issue when you try to like stack services like that of like, yeah, I'll upsell you on the ceiling. I'll upsell you on the pothole repair or ceiling. And then I'll also upsell you on the striping. Like those are all different services that have their own set of problems.
What about just combining, like maybe it's not you that's doing it, but you do some sort of referral commission thing with the other best, you know, guy that's doing driveway repairs.
I'm a big fan of subbing out. So there's definitely plays for you to like market like a digital first service business or contracting or home service company. And then you just sub the work. So maybe you're like ABC striping company, but you just sub it all.
Dude, this is crazy. The International Window Cleaning Convention is in Las Vegas next year.
Yeah. So this year, the International Window Cleaning Convention and the Power Washers of North America.
Dude, see, I was like, for the last 20 minutes, I've been trying to think of like a nerdier convention to like make fun of you, but I can't. I can't think of anything. But I think you just found it for me.
Dude, there's got to be something nerdier, man. But yeah, so they combined this year and they had like a huge conference. I didn't go to it, but it was out in Orlando.
Was there like a big rivalry between the two?
I'm not sure. I just recently joined last year.
You pressure washers off of our goddamn windows.
Well, there's lots of overlap. So the classic stack for like a window cleaning company at scale is they do gutter cleaning, window cleaning, pressure washing, and Christmas lights. And so when you go to these conventions, you'll see all of those things there. But yeah, they combined this year and it was a huge one. So they're having their next one in Las Vegas. I don't know if they're combining again, but then they have Huge, which is like a more privately owned one with some like window cleaning influencers. And they do like YouTube content and stuff like Facebook.
That's probably you, right? Facebook. Are you a window cleaning influencer?
I guess I'm actually banned from the window cleaning. Banned from the window cleaning pages on Facebook. So not necessarily. They don't like that I talk about business a lot. They just like to talk about what water-fed poles they want to use. So that's not something I'm into. But
you're banned?
I'm banned. Yeah, and I had some of the admins DMing me like, oh, like do you actually clean glass? I was like, no, I haven't cleaned glass in like a year. Like, oh, well, we only allow actual window cleaners. So if you're not cleaning glass, boom, banned. I was pissed. I was like, what the hell, dude?
How big can some of these companies get with like...
You're talking about the association? That was my question, too.
I guess either one, but like, is there anyone doing $200-300 million a year on, I don't know, power washing or anything like that? Or is it stay relatively small?
The only things you'll see 10 million plus, like you're not seeing a window cleaning company over 100 million. Even if you look at the big franchises like Fish Window Cleaning, they're the biggest like storefront residential window cleaning company in North America. And they've got like 300 franchise locations, but I think they're still like just under $100 million in their franchise. But the only times you really see big money is like in high rise. So like you'll see like big acquisitions of high rise companies doing like between 5-10 million. There's a company here, Newport Window Maintenance, who does like 10 million a year on high rise. They do all the high rises here in Orange County. and LA. And then you see some big residential ones, but it's rare because it's such low barrier to entry. It's hard to retain employees. But there's like a guy in North Carolina. He's bought like 17 window cleaning companies for all for no money down. And he's doing $5 million a year. He's got like his storefront route just doing like $1.5 million a year. He's got his residential route doing like another over $1 million a year. And he's got his commercial. So he's going crazy with it. And then he's got a course to sell to help window cleaners scale called Window Washing Wealth. They have a competition on who can clean the windows the fastest and like the cleanest, and they give them the belt. And there's tons of like, what's the word? I'm like ancillary products that people sell in those conventions too. Like, dude, like when I went to the convention, so you'll notice the window, like you'll be able to spot out who the window cleaners are and who the pressure washers are, because the pressure washers wear these goofy ass jerseys. If you just look up pressure washers jerseys,
I knew that there was beef between you two.
There's some beef because, dude, these things are goofy as hell. If you look up power washing jerseys, they're like they're like these like real ugly looking jerseys that they wear, and there's some benefit to it. They like protect from chemicals or whatever, but yeah, like just check them out. And there's a company there that has a booth, and they only sell these jerseys. That's all they do. They just sell these jerseys to pressure washers. There's also call centers that just close window cleaning jobs for window cleaners who don't want to like hire a VA or an admin. So that one's called Jill's Office. You want to check that out?
Are you going to the Vegas show next year?
Probably. It's close by, so I'll probably end up going.
All right, let me know when it is, or I guess I can sign up here. I'm definitely going, Joe.
Dude, go. I'll bring our videographer. We can get some content.
My other category of products that I thought were cool or businesses that I know it's probably just everyone's recently talking about it. I know Cody Sanchez kind of went into it for a little bit, but the ice vending machines. I love the concept of taking like you take any sort of product-based business and then you turn it into a, how do you get rid of all the labor? How do you get rid of almost all the overhead? You essentially got a big vending machine, right? I've seen a couple of people do it with, I've heard pizza's hit or miss. You got to get the pizza one really right. I love
you say that, dude. It's funny you say that because I have the dude who runs like our email for Home Service Academy. I met him through Cody Sanchez because I went and spoke. I did like a speech to like the unconventional acquisitions, which where she teaches people how to acquire businesses. And then also her contrarian cash flow group where they just talk about like boring businesses. It's another paid like membership. So I talked to both and through, I forget which one I met him through, but he's here in Orange County and he's the first one of the group to buy an ice machine. And he sent me pictures of it and he got it placed already. It's already making money, but he spent like 40 G's on it.
How much money does it make?
It's like $100 a day.
And how much does it cost to run?
I think virtually nothing.
Electricity and water. So it's pretty low. And the other part, it does cost $40,000, but I was speaking to a couple of the companies because I think it'd be a fun project to just try and see what happens. Most of them offer some sort of financing too, because such a big piece of equipment that like your startup costs, as long as you have the place to put it, it's pretty interesting.
Could you just go and partner with a ton of liquor stores essentially and say, hey, listen, whatever you were making from ice before, like I guess you have to really know how much you can go and sell with it. But you say like, hey, listen, whatever you were making with ice before, we'll go and like match, right? And then make the real big bet in terms of like leasing and rent and placement and stuff like that. That way, you know, you have a ton of foot traffic. You have essentially, you're covering that cost because now they'll just get ice from your machine instead. And then, I don't know, maybe you just have a markup on top of that. Yeah, but
what's the benefit for the liquor store?
For the liquor store is probably just that they don't have to go and manage, reorder ice and manage all of that kind of stuff. They can just like literally have this thing and maybe it'll even drive more foot traffic to their parking lot. People who just want ice but don't necessarily want booze.
Well, what he was telling me, the dude who bought the ice machine, was that when he's talking to these liquor stores to get placed, because he did place at a liquor store, and he said that the ice is actually their most profitable item, funny enough.
Oh, so they'd probably not be super down.
Yeah, so it's hard. It's a kind of a tough sell to them. But I forgot what he told me about how he like convinced them, but there's some way to do it.
There's a way to do it. I bet.
There's always a way.
I guess you then theoretically have, in my mind, every location I think would be a good location is probably a location that already sells ice. So like another example I would think of would be like, can you go and just do this at like marinas across the country? Because like everyone needs ice for their coolers or to catch fish or whatever like that. But same thing, marinas probably already have the ice.
I wonder if you have enough demand if you just put it on the side of a busy road. If you have an empty lot with like water hookup, would enough people stop on their way to the beach or somewhere that's nearby to just get like ice?
Beach thing in general. Yeah, that could be interesting.
Like I've never seen one of these in a beach parking lot, actually.
Me neither.
Right.
That seems pretty smart. Yeah.
Like a great idea.
No, yeah, there's tons of cool spots. And there's also tons of cool, like, little niche, like, vending opportunities. Like, I've seen just machines that just dispense eyelashes, like glue on eyelashes for girls. So tons of different, like, cool vending machines you can do. I mean, it's already working in Japan. So kind of cool thing I like to look at is like, okay, what's working in other countries that can probably work here?
Yeah, that's super smart. Johnny, this was, I think we might have covered more ideas than we did minutes recorded. So this was awesome, man. We'll absolutely be doing this again. I think part of the cool part about now having like 70 plus episodes is we can start calling on some of our favorite guests in the past, and you were definitely one. If people want to go ahead and follow along with all of the other business ideas that you're putting out, where can they go and check you out?
Yeah, Twitter's the number one spot I'm posting them. We're also converting into a TikTok series too on our TikTok, but Squeegee God. And then our YouTube is Johnny and Sergio. Sergio's my business partner. TikTok is just Johnny and Sergio. And then Instagram, just Johnny and Sergio.
Nice, man.
I love it.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.